Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 391 of Geek Town Radio. I'm your host Dave, and I'm back this week with Gray. How are you doing?
Hello. Thank you for having me back, Dave. It's been such a long time, but no, I am doing very well. We've both had our respective breaks, Geek Town and myself.
So. Yes, because we were off for a bit and you were buried in exam work and then off on holiday. So,
yes.
So, yes, it has been a while. What have you been watching in the intervening period?
Well, there's so many. I could go on through all the stuff I've watched in June and July, but I did a lot of reruns as well. But I'm going to talk a little bit as I'm going to bring back some films. You know those things I said I watched on a regular basis when I joined Geek Town?
Yes.
Yes, I have watched some.
Excellent.
So I've watched 4 films since I last saw you, and I'm going to sort of run them in order of enjoyment. So the first one was The Flash.
Yes.
Which I think you're going to talk about as well. So I enjoyed it, but I will talk about that more when we come to talk about it with you.
Yeah.
The second film, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I absolutely enjoyed it. However, it's quite a long film for an animation. And I'm thinking, you've got to get to the end. You've got to resolve the story. You've got to, what's going on? Why are we getting to this piece? It's not a spoiler to say, I didn't realize when I walked in there, it's part of a trilogy.
Right.
So I was never going to get that resolve because they were always going to go to be continued.
Right.
So I sat there in the cinema, like the environment for, you've got the big set pieces. And I'm like, oh my word, they've still got a lot to get through. I'm sure I've been in this cinema for over 2 hours. And then it says end. And then you realize as you come out, there's going to be a third. But I've heard on the grapevine since I've seen it that due to the strikes and the ongoing issues, that is now potentially being pushed back to 2026, 2027.
Well, yeah, I mean, the last thing I read about it was the third film has been postponed indefinitely, some of the reports I saw. So, yeah, who knows when that will appear.
And that's a scary thought because it's such a good plot. You want to keep that run. You've got to keep that flow.
Yeah.
So it was disappointing to read that we're probably not going to get an ending, you know
imminently.
A while now. So, yeah. Yes. And then I went to see Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1. This one I knew was part of 2 parts, so I was expecting
it.
Yes. There were some interesting decisions that they made plot-wise. We lost someone in this film, which I was a little bit found strange as a plot decision, and you then wonder, is it due to the actor? Is it due to the plot device? I was on the edge of my seat for the end sequence, which for many people know it is on the Orient Express or on a train.
Right.
So the end sequence is quite intense. There are lots of pieces where you think that just wouldn't happen. And you saw Pom Clemente from Guardians of the Galaxy in a completely different light.
Right.
She played one of the like henchmen villains in this version of the film.
Okay.
Really enjoyed it. But again, I still questioned at the end, like, oh, would that really, oh, you know, you've got to suspend your disbelief. And then I'm going to finish with the film I enjoyed the most. Saw it Sunday before last, just before we went on holiday, got into a viewing of Barbie. And I say got into it. I left it a little bit later than desired, and I got the last 2 seats in my cinema.
Oh, wow.
which is unheard of since, you know, Endgame times in 2019. Yeah. And it was a really, really good film. And there are a lot of people out there moaning about it being too woke or too gender critical on men and whatever people want to. They just want to put good things down sometimes.
Yeah.
And they cannot appreciate that Greta Gerwig has turned what is just a toy into a fantastic piece of cinema that is narratively extremely clever, has a bigger comment on the world. And if they hadn't had such an impressive marketing team, we know that it wouldn't be as popular as it would, because their marketing has been phenomenal. And we've read over the last couple of days that it's just hit its 1 billion mark.
Yes.
And if you think we haven't had one of those since Top Gun Maverick, as the last film that hit 1 billion, that's the last one post-pandemic. But this is the highest ranking film of a female director ever. It's broken so many records. The combination of Barbie and Oppenheimer together has been so good for both films in particular, hitting such a large market through them all. I just think, raise my hands, Greta Gerwig. My worry is that because of its huge popularity, it might be snubbed a little bit when it comes to awards season. Let's be honest, Dave, if awards season ever happens this year due to the strikes, but I just have this fear that some people become a little bit too snooty for a film that makes so much money. But you can't fault some of the work within it. It's really fantastic.
I think it's one of those things that, there's the issue that we may not actually get awards this year because the strikes are still ongoing. The awards just can't really happen because you're not going to have anybody turning up to accept anything. But it is going to be a very, very difficult one, I think, for them to ignore. Because whilst it is a $1 billion film, and there is the possibility people might get snooty about it, I think it's not in the same vein as it being something like Endgame or something like that. It actually has, because it has a message behind it, it's the sort of thing that I think, despite the fact that it is a Barbie movie, could very well land a number of awards, possibly even for Greta Gerwig for director. So I don't know. I'm less concerned about that. I mean, like you say, I'm in somewhat doubt, given that the award season is usually sort of January, February, March. I'm not sure whether we're actually going to end up with one this time around, given the way things are going.
So those are my films. We'll talk more about Flash a little bit later down the line with yourself. I've completed loads of TV. I'm not going to list them all here. I'm just going to do some of my favourite ones. So I finished Poker Face about a week after it got released. Fantastic. I listened to a lot of your podcast during that time, talking about some of the sort of setup, the Columbo style setup, and it was just, I really got hooked, and there were long episodes as well, and you have to really hold on to me if their episodes are really long, but I absolutely loved the characters. I loved the way the story was told and how you suddenly work out how she was within each story, but you didn't see that in the first part of the fantastic. Cannot wait for that to come back. And I look forward to seeing how they deal with that in a second season. I finished Black Mirror, went through that quite quickly again. My favourite was Joan is Awful, which is the first one. I just thought it was so clever how it was done, and then a bit trippy towards the end. Mm-hmm. Where you're like, oh, what? Hang on a minute. Made me even think. So I really enjoyed that. On the plane, on the way back home, I finished Silo.
Right, yes.
Have you finished that now, Dave?
Yes, I'm done with first season of that. Brilliant. But another knocking it out of the park again for Apple.
And like, for the dystopia element, like, that's not normally me. I know we've talked about a lot of things I haven't really got into, but I gave this a try, and by like episode 3, I was hooked. I mean, yes, no spoilers really, but every episode starts with a dead person, really, doesn't it?
Pretty much, yes.
And you're just like, you keep going, and you keep going. And like, I remember we were landing, my headphones died, and I had 5 minutes left of episode 6, and so put my headphones back in as we were taxiing along to the terminal, and then out the headphones came while I was waiting for the thing to connect so I could listen, watch the last 6 minutes. Just because I just was so compelled by the storyline. Traitors, we've got the Australian version dropped on BBC, and I know I'm a huge fan, told you and Matt loads about it when the British version came out in December. But oh my word, the characters, I say characters, these are normal people, but the type of character characters you have in the Australian version. Oh, that is so good. I mean, this show is a format that cannot go wrong. I'm trying to think how you can go so wrong, because it's all about the mind games they play with each other. The production team doesn't really need to get involved. It's just about how they tell and see each other. And oh, some great characters. If anyone wants to go on to BBC iPlayer and binge them all right now. And then I finished it on the day it was released, Heartstopper season 2.
Yeah.
Dropped last Thursday. So on Wednesday night, I decided to give Heartstopper season 1 a rewatch. And as you know, Dave, I'm not normally into rewatches.
Yes.
But I was like, I can't go into season 2 without reminding myself of where season 1 was. And it was a really good decision too, because actually episode 1 of season 2 is just like the next day of the last episode of season 1, which is a really smooth transition. But yeah, it's sweet. It's just, you know, it's not contrived. Yes, there are a lot of people attacking it for being like a dream imaginary world that just doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. But I don't care. I think what Alice Oseman wrote and how she's brought it to life and the messages it gives is really positive. And if more and more young people watch programs like this, it could give people in their community a more positive experience.
Yeah.
And we can hope that, that's what it does. And I really hope, and I think just from what I've seen, the numbers are going to be amazing for season 2. So we've got season three to come. And I can't see Netflix saying that Alice won't be able to finish her books with them.
Yeah.
It would be a surprise if they go, no, it's going to end with season 3, because I think they've got something here and there's potential that they could bring it on to see out her books. I think I've heard there are about 8 in just the Heartstopper, and at the moment we've covered 1, 2, and 3. So I might be wrong in that. I've got them actually at home. I'm going to read them as well. So that's where we are with that. So those are my favourite things I've finished. Things on my watch list. I'm watching Hijack. Heard you talk about that loads last week. So excited
brilliant.
To get on with that. Crowded Room, the Tom Holland.
Yes. Also Apple,
quite a difficult watch, but brilliantly done. Righteous Gemstones. Now, I heard you talk about this last week and say you'd never seen it.
Yeah.
It is bonkers. And if you ever watch Vice Principal, which was the Danny McBride previous sort of Sky comedy, HBO Max sort of thing, it's got that sort of wackiness. The characters are out there, and it's just about an evangelical family who are very rich because they run a church in Southern America. And it's about the things they get up to, and I really enjoy it. Some of their storylines are absolutely bonkers. The guest stars they get in it are just like how they get them all. John Goodman is the head of the family, and you know, it's really, really good. So I'm watching that about 6 episodes in, and it's a hate watch at this point. I'm 2 episodes into Secret Invasion. Again, I listened to the podcast last week and I sort of know where we're going. So me and my friend who I watch them with have decided to hate watch it together this Thursday.
We're going to
do all 4 episodes with a break in between episodes 4 and 5. We're going to do 4 in a row just to try and get through it so we can say we've done it and prep ourselves for Loki and Marvels, which is coming out in the autumn.
Yeah.
And I think that's me, Dave. I think I've covered everything that I've done in the last few months, apart from marking thousands of exam papers and things like that. But yes, over to you. And I know I've still got more to say about The Flash, but go over to you.
Yes. Well, I actually saw a couple of films myself, of the first one being The Flash this week. I also enjoyed it. I mean, I know it got a lot of hate and that it's not perfect by any means, but thoroughly enjoyable. I thought the messing around with the sort of multiverse stuff worked quite well. The Michael Keaton stuff was good. I mean, Ezra, yes, you know, he's got his faults. He played that character pretty well, I thought. And I know we're probably never going to see him in that role again. I doubt that they're going to keep on using him given everything that's gone on. I thought the plotting was interesting. It's one of those things where, kind of like Secret Invasion, where Flashpoint is such a big story, mm-hmm. and it's odd to open a Flash movie with Flashpoint as being the plot that you go with, because it is something which is supposed to sort of reset. I mean, they used it as a reset in the comic books for the entire universe. So it's an odd one to kind of decide to do that as your film, as a sort of opening solo movie for the character, because and the comic book is quite different as well. The comic book does sort of have the basic plot points of goes back in time to save his mother and comes back and realizes that he's completely altered history. But in the comic book version, there is a huge war going on between the Amazons and the Atlanteans, led by Aquaman on one side and Wonder Woman on the other. So there's this big sort of war going on, and that's sort of the main thing, rather than bringing in the Zod, the villain from the Superman film. So, I mean, I get why they made that change, because it makes sense and it saves you having to pay a fortune to Gal Gadot and Jason Momoa, or they do make cameos in the film, but not having to have them as key players throughout the entire thing, I imagine, saved quite a bit of cash. But I mean, I thought they handled the change reasonably well. Also, the villain is different as well. I mean, not just that villain, but the time villain. The speedster villain isn't the same as it is in the movie, without giving that away. So there are some differences to the comic book version, and I can sort of see why they made those changes. I don't think it was perfect. I thought Ezra was good. But, you know, and that's the thing with the DC films at this point. It's sort of, well, that was interesting, but onwards and upwards with the Gunn Saffron universe when that comes out, you know. So that's sort of where we are there now.
Yeah. I found it hard to hate Ezra as much as I feel like we need to.
Yes.
Because actually he gave quite a compelling performance, and I was enjoying most of it. And the bit, which I know was supposed to get everyone excited, the bit where all the metaverses, we started seeing those elements. Sorry, everyone, for little spoilers. But all of those metaverse bits that we started seeing,
yeah.
I was more disappointed in that.
Yes.
I really didn't enjoy that. And my friend who I was watching it with hated the last bit as well, with that cameo that no one expected.
Right, yes.
That they failed to land the ending because of that. They were too interested in making a joke rather than, you know, so there was the couple of things, but in essence, I enjoyed everything up until that bit, really, which you needed that bit to end the plot, but it was a bit of a frustrating element to the film. But I enjoyed what they did, and I expected a lot worse, considering the press coverage, the amount of times it'd gone back into the editing studio, the people had been cut out of it and cut into it. And I think it was a pretty good job for what they did. So it was by no means the worst thing in the world. But, you know, people love to hate, so they're going to throw lots of hate on anything that surprises them in particular. So,
yeah, I think that's fairly true.
Mm.
So that was one of the big films that I saw this week. The other one was Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which is out now on Disney Plus. I didn't see that in the cinema, so I finally got around to watching that. I thought that, again, was a fun movie. Didn't go exactly where I expected it to go. I'd avoided most spoilers for it, so I didn't know who out of the Guardians made it through. I won't give spoilers away in for that. But I mean, the basic plot of the movie is the Guardians are now headquartered on nowhere, and they're sort of hanging out there, and out of nowhere, or rather flying into nowhere, is Adam Warlock, who was teased ages and ages ago in a post-credit sequence. He basically turns up and starts to attack the place, and Rocket gets critically wounded. It turns out that Rocket has a kill switch built into his body, so they have to go and find a way to turn off the kill switch, and that ends up going into a sort of thing about Rocket's past, and you get to see how Rocket became Rocket, basically, from the sort of basic raccoon to being the Rocket that we know. So some of that is shown in flashback as Rocket's kind of lying unconscious, you seeing him remembering this sort of stuff. And then, you know, some of it moves forward into present day as well. But it's really designed to tug at the heartstrings. It flip-flops really quickly, and it isn't too jarring, but it could be in less capable hands, because it sort of goes between being just heartbreaking to being incredibly funny, silly, over the top explosions, that sort of stuff, back to being really heartbreaking again, back to being silly, over the top jokes, explosions. So it's very much tonally all over the place, but James Gunn manages to pull it off in this unlike with Love and Thunder, where Taika really didn't get the tone of that and it was just way too silly and you had a serious plot line in the middle of it that just really jarred, this, I think, handles that sort of thing much better. Mm. Overall, we know, if you've read anything about the film, that this is not going to be that iteration of the Guardians moving forward. They did add a tagline, sort of spoilers, because it does give away one of the characters that definitely survived, which was, it comes up with a tagline with Star-Lord will return.
That was one of the end credits, mid credits, one of them anyway.
Yeah. Did you see this?
I saw it in the cinema, and my friend who I go and see these films with was a bit frustrated because, you know, you go into that film thinking we aren't going to see him anymore. You know, we genuinely thought that was the end of Chris and his time with going to be seen again.
Yes. So some of those characters we are definitely going to be seeing again, assuming they make a new Guardians movie, but it obviously won't be done with James Gunn because James Gunn is now head of the rival studio. And he's also said that he's done his trilogy. He would be very happy for somebody else to take on the characters and doesn't want them to imitate his style. He would rather they went off in their own direction. But I mean, they've set it up so that is possible. So you could do something with that. Mm. Overall, I enjoyed it. I did think Will Poulter was slightly wasted as Adam Warlock. He sort of was there, but kind of wasn't. Yeah. I think that was possibly the only real criticism of it, was that's a slightly wasted character. But the rest of them, I thought, was good. And I thought they subverted expectations with sort of who ends up with who and where they all end up. So overall, though, it's certainly a thoroughly enjoyable, if you're into the MCU, perfectly enjoyable, decent movie, better than some of the previous ones we've had quite recently, I think.
Yes, but trigger warning for small children who have got their first pets.
That is a fair point. Those were the two films that I watched. TV wise, Jack Ryan season 4, I have started. I'm only one episode into that, the last outing of Jack Ryan, so I'm not going to talk a huge amount about that until I get to sort of the end of it. Good Omens season 2, though, I have watched that. Have you watched any of the Good Omens?
No, I haven't. I mean, I like both of the actors, but no, I haven't got round to doing it.
Good Omens 1 is great, and I would encourage you to go watch that, certainly. Good Omens season 2, without giving spoilers away, is absolutely heartbreaking how they come to the end of that, to the point where the amount of people that were messaging Neil Gaiman afterwards going, you have to tell me there is a third season, because it's clearly that's not where they're planning on ending it. And all Gaiman and Michael Sheen have said is, you know, obviously we want to make a third season, but it's up to Amazon and it will depend how many people watch season 2. So I would encourage you all to go and watch season 2. The writing on it is superb. It's an oddity in that it's not actually directly based on anything that Gaiman did with Terry Pratchett. The third season would be based on the outline that they had for the second book, which they never managed to get to write. And what the second season is a sort of bridge between where they ended the first season and where they need to be at the start of the third season. Mm. So they've created this season as a sort of bridge to that. And it's thoroughly enjoyable. John Finnemore is the co-writer on it, and you can see his fingerprints all over it. If you know John Finnemore in his Radio 4 show, he's hilariously funny and very surreal in places, and perfect person to be doing this. Be prepared for the end of the second season if you do go into that, because it's not as happy as you might expect, but it's superb and highly entertaining and very, very funny throughout. Just well, well worth going to watch that second season. I really, really hope that they do come back for a third. Lincoln Lawyer returned for part 2 of season 2, which I had no intention of actually watching the whole of this last night, but I did. It's just incredibly bingeable, that show. Really good. I thoroughly enjoyed the first half of season 2, based on Michael Connelly novels. It's just, it's fun. It's very much a dramedy. If you like things like The Rookie, it's in that sort of humour, drama level. Some wonderfully funny, well-written characters. There's a really good story of this woman who's being accused of murdering this guy that's building a high-rise next to her restaurant. And she's obviously upset by that because he's trying to buy her out and she's refusing. And then she gets accused of this murder.
Is it one storyline arc across the whole season, or is it a procedural structure?
It's one storyline arc throughout the whole season. Did you watch the first season of it, or have you not?
No, I didn't. I just read a report somewhere that they were shocked that this film, which felt like a classic sort of NBC, ABC drama, was doing so well on Netflix.
Yes.
It sort of bucked the trend to what they expect to do well on Netflix. And I suppose that annoys all the pundits and the statisticians. They're like, you know, this isn't supposed to do very well, but yeah, it was doing well.
Yeah, that is absolutely true, because it is very, very, very much in the vein of something you would expect to see on ABC or CBS. It's very much that sort of 45 minute network dramedy setup, but it is a story that runs from episode to episode. It's not procedural story of the week sort of thing. But yeah, so it's one plot over the entire thing. It's got some great cliffhangers, which ended up with me binging basically the entire second half of the season last night. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable, and it's well acted. It's got some good people in it. It's well written. It's a good, solid story. Slightly odd final episode in that the story seems to finish within the first sort of 15 minutes of that episode. And then I was looking at it going, hang on, there's 30 minutes of this episode left. What are they doing for the rest of it? But there's some interesting stuff that happens in those last 30 minutes. I really rather enjoyed it. There's an interesting little twist at the end. I hope they make more of that, because it is, like you say, it's an oddity for Netflix that sort of thing is doing so well on there. And the other thing I watched this week is coming to an end. I think we've got to be coming to the last few episodes of it, but Star Trek Strange New Worlds had another sort of whiplash episode, having gone from the crossover episode, which was 2 weeks ago, to a much more sort of serious episode dealing with the aftermath of the Klingon War and PTSD, a much harder kind of episode. And then they're back last week with the episode which is called Subspace Rhapsody, and the entire thing is a musical. And it's very much done in the Buffy Once More With Feeling vibe. They did say that was their inspiration and that was the bar that they were trying to match, because they were the first people really to do a fully musical episode of a standard TV show, and they sort of set the trend for it. But they did that so, so, so well with that episode, in that it wasn't just a musical for musical's sake. It also drove the story forward in some major ways. And they're trying to do the same thing with the Strange New Worlds episode as well. I don't think it does that side of it quite as successfully, but the songs are really good. It's joyously fun. There's a lot of people I've seen making comments about, well, I'm a fan of Strange New Worlds, I hate musicals, but actually rather enjoyed that. So the cast could sing. I mean, there are some people in the cast who have, like, I think won Grammys. So, you know, I mean, there are a few people. On the other end of the scale, there's Anson Mount, who I think takes the sort of, you know, if you can't sing well, sing loudly kind of idea. But he works, I mean, still comes across really, really well. I think some of them are probably auto-tuned a little bit, but, you know, they pull it off, and it's joyous, it's fun. The basic premise of the plot is that they come across this subspace anomaly and they're trying to boost their communication array. They fire some music into it and it sort of all backfires and ends up with the entire ship doing musical numbers. It's joyously fun. That series has been superb. Just the way that it's managed to produce very individual episodes, much in the style of the original show. It's got the tone of it right. It's kind of fun, but it's also got some serious parts. The acting is great. The plotting has been really good. Overall, I think they're really doing an amazing job on that show, and I'm really glad it's been renewed for a new season, and I'm so happy that they're carrying it on, because I think that is probably my favourite of the new Star Trek shows right now. Worth going to check out, but it is on Paramount Plus, so if you've got Paramount Plus, go and give that a look.
I mean, I've heard, you know, I don't watch obviously Star Trek, but I've heard such amazing reviews of it from a real range of audiences, from the hardcore Trekkies to people who've never sort of gone to it before, are just singing so many praises on this series. So, you know, I think it must be something that they're doing well. Yeah. Actually, they've had a few. Wasn't there a season of Picard that didn't go too well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, the third season of Picard, I think, was really good. And it got progressively better for me as you sort of went through it. The first season, I wasn't a huge fan of. Second season, I thought was better. Third season, I think they really nailed it, of Picard. Discovery, I enjoy, but has issues in that it doesn't feel like traditional Trek. The thing that I love about this is it's very much gone back to its original core roots of the original series, and it spiritually is so close to that. Just does such a wonderful job, and it's episodic. There are sort of some continuing plots, but most of it is Monster of the Week episode type things, and they've just done an outstanding job with it. It's been really, really, really good. That I'm very much enjoying. Lower Decks I enjoy as well, because you would never have thought you could manage to get one of the guys behind Rick and Morty to do a series in Star Trek and still make it feel like Star Trek, even though it's got elements of Rick and Morty in it as well. You know, it's one of those things. But yeah, that and Lower Decks, which Lower Decks returns fairly soon as well for a new season. But I love both those shows. That's all the stuff we've been watching this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So we kick off the TV and film news with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. There's only a couple of cancellations, or one cancellation, one ending. City on Fire, which was an Apple TV series that has been cancelled after one season. I have no idea what that is. it was one that completely bypassed me, unfortunately. So yeah, it was one created by Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, who are the people that were behind, do you remember Runaways, that Marvel series? And they did Gossip Girl. Yeah. They're the people that were behind Gossip Girl as well. So, I mean, no slouches. You would think that would probably be okay. But it was a sort of crime drama thing, I think. Unfortunately, that is not coming back after one season. The other thing that they've announced is going to end is Disenchantment, which is the Matt Groening of Simpsons and Futurama fame. They've announced that that will end with its fifth season, or fifth part, I believe they're referring to. Technically, I think it's season three, but it's part five. So it was ordered for two seasons, which was split into four parts of 10 episodes each. And then they ordered a fifth part, which is only 10 episodes. So it's of sort of half a season. But yes, season five, part five of Disenchantment with the last one, which is kind of a shame because it may be the first time he's had three shows on air actually at once, because Simpsons obviously is still running, Futurama is now back, and Disenchantment will be back for a final season. Then he's going to lose one again. So yeah, I don't know whether you've caught any of that.
I watched like 10 episodes of the first one and I just couldn't get into it.
Right.
I really wanted to, because I love Futurama. I'm doing a rewatch of Futurama at the moment to get me to the new seasons. And I really enjoyed The Simpsons. I don't watch them as religiously as I used to. But I think I remember trying to watch it. And then I went back and watched it, like the first two episodes again, and still didn't get into it. And I thought, you know, if I've tried twice and can't get into it, I've got to stop now.
Yeah, I struggled a bit with Disenchantment as well, unfortunately. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Futurama. I'm a huge fan of Simpsons, although I don't watch The Simpsons regularly. But it's nice to know it's there. You know, it's one of those things.
Yeah.
I really struggled getting into Disenchantment, but I know there are a lot of huge fans of it out there. So, yeah. On the renewal side of things, the summer I Turn Pretty has been renewed for season three at Prime Video. Apparently, season two was one of the top 10 most watched seasons of any series ever on Prime Video, interestingly. Wow. Have you seen any of this? It's a YA series.
No. I've heard about it. I've seen the adverts and the trailers, like when I turned on Amazon.
Yeah.
But I've not watched it, no.
It's based on a series of books by, I think it's actually done by the author as well. Yeah. So Jenny Han, who wrote To All the Boys, also wrote The Summer I Turned Pretty, which is a trilogy. So I'm assuming each season is probably covering one book. She actually created the TV series as well. And it follows a character called Isabel Belly. She's about to turn 16 and she and her family reunite with Susan and Fisher and her two sons, Jeremiah and Conrad, the latter of which Belly has had a crush on since she was 10 years old. And it's about them sort of going to meet up over the summer and what happens between them. So it's a sort of teen love story thing, I think. Yeah, it didn't massively appeal to me on the surface of it.
There's an audience out there for everything.
Yes, back for a third season. So they've not said that third season is going to be the last one, but there are three books. So maybe, maybe not, I don't know. In pickups and other news, Neighbours has finally got a return date. So if you're a fan of Neighbours, it is returning on Monday, the 18th of September on Freevee, which, as the name implies, is free. So all you need is an Amazon account, not a Prime account, just an Amazon account to go and watch Freevee. Go and sign up for free on amazon.co.uk. It will be airing daily from Monday to Thursday. So you'll get four episodes a week and it will be Neighbours back with some slight changes. They've introduced some new characters. Some of the old ones are coming back and some of them are coming back in guest roles and that sort of stuff. But Neighbours will be returning. Did you see any of the finale stuff? Because I sort of meant to go and watch it and then didn't. And
yeah, I tuned in for the last episode and I hadn't watched it for so many years. I didn't know who half the people were.
Yeah.
But I went there just for the nostalgia and saw the weird use of Kylie, there's overuse of Guy Pearce, very little use of Jason and Kylie. And I wondered, that was all good press coverage to have them coming back. But yeah, I'm glad it got its reprieve. It's just weird about the way they went around it because they really did close off the entire program. And then they're like, oh, but we are coming back. And it's like, oh, all of that big parade in their last episode for nothing, really. So, yes. But no, I am the nard about whether I'd go back, but I'm not sure I could commit to something four nights a week. That's quite a big commitment for a TV fan like myself. So
yes, I'm kind of with you there. I can't really do that either. But I'm glad it is back for the fans of Neighbours. And it is on somewhere in the UK. Yes, it's a streaming service, but it is a free streaming service. So you'll be able to go and watch that from Monday, the 18th of September. It's on Freevee. Also on another streaming service, Paramount Plus, they've been running the new Quantum Leap show, which I've been really enjoying, actually. Still haven't quite finished the episodes that are up for the first season, but the part two of that first season, they've announced that will be landing on the 24th of August, which is a Thursday, and then we're dropping all those episodes as a box set as well. So that'll be the rest of season one. There is a second season coming out, which I think is due to drop in October, because I think they've actually shot it. So it's one of the rare scripted shows which is actually coming back on NBC in the fall season. So I think that is actually returning for a second season over there. It will then be probably 2024, I imagine, before we actually get it. It might be early 2024, but it's going to be a little while before it lands here because they dropped them as box sets. Second half of season one, that lands on Thursday the 24th of August on Paramount Plus. Did you watch any of the original Quantum Leap? I don't know. Or...
No, it was around about my era. I remember it being on when we were younger. Yeah. I want to say, was it on BBC Two?
Yes, it was that sort of 6 p.m. BBC Two slot where they always used to run sci-fi, yeah.
Kind of wasn't into it, but I think I listened to you talking to Matt about it a few podcasts ago. I didn't remember it from back then, so yeah, not something I probably wouldn't be interested in. But we might be desperate around September, October. I could be watching anything. Who knows?
That is true. Yes, we might be struggling for content by then. There was some other announcements for the big BBC show. Strictly Come Dancing have announced their contestants as well. Not all of them yet. They are announcing them this week, but we're recording this on Monday. So far we have Eddie Cady, who is a stand-up comedian and radio presenter, Christian Guru Murphy, who is a journalist and broadcaster, Leighton Williams, who is a film and theatre actor, Amanda Abington, who is an award-winning stage and screen actor, Angela Scanton, who is an Irish television presenter, Zara McDermott, who is from Love Island and has appeared on, she's basically a reality TV star, she's been on a bunch of others, and Angela Rippon CBE, who is of course journalist, TV presenter, newsreader, author, and I think at this point National Treasure, I think is probably fair to say.
I think now she becomes the oldest contestant ever to be on it. I think they're trying to up themselves each year.
Yes.
And get the oldest person, and apparently it was Leslie Joseph a few years back, but now Angela will now become the oldest contestant to ever appear.
Yes. I don't think I've ever really watched an episode of Strictly. I don't know. It's one of those things that I know a lot of people love, but just completely bypasses me. But yeah, I am quite happy to see Angela Rippon on there. It was funny. She was talking about it on Chat Show earlier this week and was like, could have asked me to do this 10 years ago when I was not as old. And but anyway, so yes. But I'm glad she's taken up to do it. That's great.
She was a former dancer as well. I remember seeing the clips of her on the Morecambe and Wise show.
Yes, Morecambe and Wise. So, those classic clips of her on Morecambe and Wise. So we'll see how she goes. I suspect she's going, oh, you know, bear in mind that was a long time ago, but you know, I think she may actually do pretty well. She also presented Come Dancing before it became Strictly Come Dancing, and the huge show it is now. I think back when it was a ballroom show, because there was a sort of predecessor to Strictly that used to run on Sunday evenings. I think she was a presenter on that. Yeah, it's nice to have her come back and do that anyway. So moving on to some other bits of news, the strike. We're back with some more strike updates. We're going to, I think, do bits and pieces of this each week because we need to keep you updated on what's going on with it. There were some talks held between not the Actors Guild, but the Writers Guild and the studios on Friday. However, they have not gone particularly well by the sides of it. Basically, the Hollywood studios are still not willing to move on anything to do with success-based residuals or preservation of the writer's room, which are two of the key points that they're asking for in the strike. The success-based residuals, which is the same for the actors, is this thing with streaming services, the amount of money that they get paid when episodes go out on air and when things are added and repeated and stuff is a flat fee. It is not based on the amount of viewers that are watching the show, which is different to how residuals work in TV, because if you're on a hit show in TV, you get paid more money because more people watched it and there's more money coming in from advertising. Because most of the streaming services are subscription services and don't use advertising, they worked out a different model. But the problem with that is it's screwing over particularly people that are starting out in the business and they aren't getting paid anywhere near the amount of money. So, for example, Heartstopper, given that the leads in that are unknowns, or were when they started, chances are the amount of money that they were paid to star in that wasn't particularly high. And even though that is one of the most successful shows on the platform, or we assume it is, because that's the other problem, we don't actually know unless they release numbers, which they refuse to do. The residuals that they earn are based on the fee that they were initially paid for that show, which means that even though it could be the biggest show on the streaming service, they are getting pennies back from the residuals on that when the show airs.
It's shocking that it's even getting to this point now, like to have the actors go as well and they're still not negotiating. Yeah. It's just, I nearly wrote an email to you earlier this week when I was going to ask when the FBI series might be coming back, and then I just had to stop and think, no, I know what Sky are doing right now. They're holding on to anything they can because they're probably going to need stuff for their September schedules. And so, yeah, me asking whether FBI was going to come back would have been a silly question because they're not going to release any dates because they're going to need programs to show.
The FBI shows actually are back. We have got dates for those. All the FBI shows are back in August.
That's later than last year, though. I think it was July last year, yeah.
August 17th and 18th. So August 17th for FBI and International and 18th for Most Wanted. They're back. But, I mean, we are almost a year behind the US on those at that point. Although we won't be because they're running those out over here. But they're not going to be coming back in the autumn in the US. Number of actors are also slightly having problems navigating the strike rules as well. Notably, Stephen Amell, Zach Levy, and Jamie Lee Curtis are three that have got themselves into hot water. Basically, they're doing public events, which they are allowed to do as part of the strike, and they've been making comments on stage, which have then got them in hot water with various people. Stephen Amell, I think, probably made the worst one putting his foot in it, basically went up on stage. And I get sort of what he was saying. He was saying, I support my union, but I don't agree with striking. So, of course, that had everybody up in arms because they're like, how can you support your union if you don't agree with the strike? And you've got to look at the situation. The strike rules say that although you can go up and do panels at comic cons, you are not allowed to promote any of the work that was done under a SAG-AFTRA contract. So that means Stephen Amell can go to a comic con, but he's not allowed to talk about Arrow and he's not allowed to talk about Heels. So, which are his two shows. And Heels has just released a second season in the US. We don't know when it's going to land over here before anybody asks, but Heels has just released its second season. And there is a very good chance that if they don't promote it, it will get canned. And he's very passionate about that show. And I think he has more of an issue with the strike rules and the fact that they're not allowed to promote things that are already done and in the can. Mm. Particularly when you're potentially going to put a whole bunch of people out of work for a show that if they had promoted it, might not get cancelled. And yeah, if they don't promote it, it's on shaky ground. So yeah. I think it was more just his frustration at that than anything else. But the way he phrased it wasn't particularly good. And so, yeah, he got in some hot water for that. Zach Levy, his was rather more innocent. It was him on stage basically saying, so I'm up, you can ask me questions, but I'm not allowed to talk about like any superhero movies. This is so dumb. I'm not allowed to talk about any superheroes I might have played. I'm not allowed to talk about any sort of, geek shows I might have been in. And it was the fact that he made the comment, this is so dumb. And what he was saying, in the context of what he was saying, he was joking around. He was basically saying, it's a bit silly that this is what I'm having to navigate through. And I get it, because in his particular case, if he's not promoting anything new again and he's talking about old shows, that's tricky. I mean,
yeah,
I'd be fascinated to know what is going on in, I think it's Las Vegas at the moment, because they've got a Star Trek convention with actors up on stage, none of which are able to talk about Star Trek.
It's just bonkers. It's just, I get why they're, and I totally agree with them. I'm just so shocked that the studios aren't pulling together and thinking, actually, we've got to protect them.
It's ridiculous. Jamie Lee Curtis was the third one, made a comment about wanting to be like Switzerland when she was asked about the strike. And that again got it was a charity event she was at. And somebody threw a question at her about, what do you think about the strike? And she said, I want to be like Switzerland. All she meant by that, I mean, she's categorically come out. All of these have come out and said, I absolutely support the strike. I support the union. But yeah, I know all she was saying there was really, I think, was she didn't really want to make a comment about it, but that was the word she chose. And then, well, Switzerland is neutral. And that, does that mean you're not on the side of the union? And, you know, it's them trying to churn up stuff in the press. That's all it was with that one. So, you know, they go from being sort of misspeaking and just getting caught out on stage. What is the slight problem, I think, for us is obviously we've got various comic cons coming up. There's MCM and Wales coming up. I do wonder whether they're actually going to allow us to film anything, because a lot of the actors might be like, well, no, just in case I say anything stupid, I don't want it on camera. So I don't know. We'll see. We'd usually bring footage from that, but I have a sneaking suspicion we may not be able to film things, but we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, we're very much with the writers, we're very much with the actors on this. I entirely agree with you. It seems so short-sighted of the Hollywood studios to not agree a fairer deal with the people that are actually giving you the content to keep you on air, because without that content you don't have a service. And it seems ridiculous to me.
Well, yeah, I remember saying at the beginning, when they're in the early stages, you know, we lost some amazing shows during that one in 2010, including like Pushing Daisies.
Yep.
And the only casualties that this will be is good talent, because, you know, those more experimental programs will get canned because no one really wants to risk them, because even when this is resolved, everyone will want to play safe because they just want to get quick good content out there, mm-hmm. rather than being experimental. And, you know, we are potentially going to lose writers, actors. They'll move on to other projects. They might, you know, some of them will have to probably go out and find work elsewhere soon, because yeah. there'll be a point where they can't survive on their savings or pensions or whatever they're relying on during this time. And we are the ones that suffer in the end, because we'll lose good content. And yeah.
Yeah. It's damaging to the audiences. It's damaging. It's incredibly damaging to the industry as a whole, and the actors and the writers. But at the moment, a lot of them are suffering. And, you know, you might be saying Hollywood actors suffering, but bear in mind that the thing that they are fighting for is not for the Stephen Amells and Zach Levy's out there. It's for the 90% of the actors union who don't even make enough money to be covered by their own medical insurance in the US because they are background actors, because they are whatever. They are not making a livable wage. And it's the same with the writers as well. There are a bunch of people that have written on hit TV shows and are not making enough money to live. And that is just wrong, given how much money the studios are raking in, despite the fact that they're saying, oh, you know, our streaming service doesn't make enough money. And then you look at the bonuses that they're being given. Come off it. I'm sorry. Yeah. You need to share the wealth around. I mean, as I said before, it's not the named people that you know that they're fighting for in this. It's the people that you don't know, and it's the people that make the industry work. Moving on to some new shows, Those About to Die, which is a new thing from Roland Emmerich, who is the person that made The Patriot and the original Stargate movie and Independence Day and a whole bunch of other things. He's well known for those sort of climate disaster movies. Things, yeah. That sort of stuff. But he's turned his attention to Rome. It's a drama that stars Anthony Hopkins, Ewan Rheon, and Sarah Martins, the leads in it. And center of Roman Empire is the wealthiest city in the world, and there's a heavy influx of slave laborers from the growing empire to take over the work. The Roman population, bored, restless, and increasingly violent, is kept in line mainly by two things: free food and spectacular entertainment in the form of chariot racing and gladiator fights. Those About to Die delves into this world of games, a world characterized by bloodlust, greed for money, and the pursuit of power and corruption. It is a show that is going to be based around the gladiators and chariot racing in Rome. Anthony Hopkins is one of the leads. Ewan Rheon, who Game of Thrones, is in there. Tom Hughes, who is in Victoria, is in there. Sarah Martins, who's from Death in Paradise. Hankor Johansson from Game of Thrones is in there. Jojo Mascari from Sex Education. Rupert Perry-Jones is in there from Whitechapel and a bunch of other things. Don't recognise any of the other names, but yeah, looks like a pretty good lineup. I mean, it's interesting because the other show that sort of dealt with a lot of this gladiator stuff was Spartacus, which I really, really enjoyed. I don't know whether you ever saw any of those. I mean, they were sort of bloody violent and over the top, but that was a great, great show. So it's going to be interesting to see sort of how Roland Emmerich deals with this. And it's been picked up by Prime Video in the UK. It's someone else in the US, but it's Prime Video are running it in the UK. So don't know exactly when it's landing, but yeah, that has been picked up by Prime Video. So any interest in that? I rather like the Roman stuff.
Afraid not for me. It's definitely a no. Roland Emmerich at the best of times can be a little bit dodgy for me, some of his stuff. But no, that doesn't appeal to me. Again, it's probably in my big costume dramas that I'm not going to want to watch there.
Yeah, I mean, it depends exactly how it's handled. Robert Rodat is the head writer for it, who wrote Saving Private Ryan. So, you know, I mean, decent writer behind it. And I mean, Roland Emmerich, sort of take it or leave it, I guess. But the other one is a guy that worked at Marco Cuspantiner, I think is the last name, and wrote some of the Lazarus Project, which was a great series.
Yeah, so, I enjoyed that.
Apparently he worked on that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, good people involved in it and a reasonable cast. But it's called Those About to Die. It's coming to Prime Video at some point. That. And the other casting news we've got is for a new show which is coming to Apple TV. They announced it a while ago, and it was just known as the Dick Turpin series, and Noel Fielding is playing the lead role as Dick Turpin. So you know it's not going to be a particularly serious show, and it's an interesting one for Apple to be running, but they've now given it a title, and it's called The Completely Made-Up Adventures of Dick Turpin. So I rather like the idea of that they're going full-on silly with the title of this. Dick Turpin always believed that he was destined for something bigger than a lifetime working in his father's butcher shop, and he was right. When, almost without realising it, he becomes the leader of the Essex Gang, a notorious group of outlaws, he realises that he has found his calling. Yes, he's a vegan, peace-loving, and believes that good manners are more effective than guns, but what he lacks in thieving craft, he makes up for in imagination, invention, and incredibly pointy purple shoes. In this irreverent tale, Dick is the most famous and unlikely of highwaymen. His success is defined primarily by his charm, style, and hair. Along with his gang of lovable rogues, Dick rives the ups and downs of fame, doing what he can do to escape the clutches of the anti-thieves general. Joining Noel Fielding, I mean, the cast is ridiculous for this, because it is a smorgasbord of sort of British comedy. Hugh Bonneville, who you'll know from W1A, Paddington, all those sort of things, Emmy and Golden Globe and SAG Award winning, he's playing Jonathan Wilde, who is now the thief-taker general. He's utterly corrupt lawman with a vacuum where his morals should be, ferocious appetite to expand his criminal enterprise. So that's one of them. Asim Chowdhury, who is from People Just Do Nothing, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Black Mirror, plays Craig the Warlock, a man petrified of being caught performing magic without a license. He attempted to pass his official warlock exams multiple times, but racked up hundreds of major errors. Tasmin Greig, from Green Wing episodes and Friday Night Dinners, is playing Lady Helen Guinier. She's the elected leader of the Syndicate, a union of organised crime groups with fingers in every pie from illicit eel husbandry to diamond smuggling. Mark Heap from Friday Night Dinner and Green Wing is also in their place. John Turpin, Hempstead's irascible butcher and father of Dick. Lover of meat, hater of vegetables, he hides his affection for his only son under a layer of cynicism so deep not even a meat cleaver could penetrate it. Joe Wilkinson, who was in Afterlife and The Cockfield, plays Jeffrey the Gola, the ultimate nihilist who will tout his mediocre services to anybody in need of a jailer, security guard, or general dog's body, no questions asked. Mark Wootton from Nativity and My New Best Friend plays Moose Pleck, one of Dick's gang, a terrifying looking man mountain, but on the inside he's just a big old softy. Ellie White from Wonka and Staff Let's Platt plays Nell Brazier, another of Dick's gang, who has dreamed of being a highwayman since she was a little girl. Brought up in luxury, Nell threw away her dresses for riches and ran away at 16 to make it on her own. So that's the regular cast. As well as that, there are also other series regulars, which is Michael Fielding, who was in The Mighty Bush and is Noel's actual brother, as Benny Turpin, Kerry Flatley from Paddy, Samuel Leakey from Treason, Jeff McGiven from Ghosts and Back, and Dolly Wells from The Outlaws and Dracula are also in there as well. And even more on top of that, if that's not enough British talent for you, they've got a bunch of guest spots. So Greg Davis is in there as one of them. Jessica Hines is in there from Years and Years in Space. Paul Kay is in there from Game of Thrones, Vera, Stranger. Gus Kahn from Men Like Modine. Diane Morgan from Kunk and Earth. Connor Swindell from Sex Education, Laura Checkley from The Detectorist, and David Thurifol from Shameless as well. So yeah, a bunch of great guest spots. I mean, the cast is just ridiculous for this. I think this sounds fantastic.
Well, I think I've always found Noel Fielding stuff a bit off the wall and not always got on with it.
Yes.
Just because of the cast, I'd give it a go. If he left Bake Off to do this, I'd not hold him against him. So move on, Noel. Leave Bake Off. You go and focus on this. Let's bring in a new host to replace you on Bake Off and I'll be happy.
I know what you mean. I think he's mellowed a bit as he's got older. Like, he's on Buzzcocks as well, which is he's also coming back reasonably soon. I think he's back next month for a new season with Greg Davis. And I really like him on that. And I think he's toned the surrealism down a little bit. And with this, I think if it's toned down a little bit more, it's directed by Ben Palmer, who worked on Inbetweeners movie and Breeders. It's written by some of the people behind The Outlaws as well, although Taz got some of the people from League of Gentlemen in there as script consultants. So, you know, there may be some sort of slightly more surreal stuff in there. But if it's toned down and not quite as surreal as some of Noel's own stuff, I'm certainly up for doing this. Because I don't know whether you remember, there was a Dick Turpin series ages and ages ago, back in the 80s, late 70s, which I remember watching on TV. But that was more of a sort of family drama thing, you know. Yeah. So it's one of those characters that has been around for a long, long time, and they've not really done anything with. So I'm just quite happy that they've picked up a Dick Turpin thing as well. And the fact that they're going full on comedy with it, and it's Apple doing it, and it's a very sort of British setup. I'm quite up for this. I think it sounds like it could be quite good.
Yeah, I'll give it a go. I'm sure I'll give it a go.
Yeah. Don't know when that's landing on Apple, but it is one of the things that I think is outside the strike action, because as you can see by that cast list, most of them are British, which means it's working probably under Equity. And that means that they have no problems filming it because Equity are not on strike. That's all the news we've got for this week. Just some highlights for next week on TV. Sticking with Apple on the highlights on next week on TV, we start off with Strange Planet, which is a new adult animated series created by Dan Harmon, who is one of the people behind Rick and Morty, and New York Times bestselling author Nathan W. Pyle. He wrote a series of comic books, which is what these are based off. This looks like it could be quite a good show, but Strange Planet, that's called. It's on 8th of August on Apple TV. Annika is back with Nicola Walker on Alibi for a second season. That is coming on the 9th of August at 9 p.m. on Alibi. High School Musical, the musical, the series is back for season 4, which is the final season, which all gets very meta, I think, in that. And that's coming to Disney Plus on the 9th of August. Cruel Summer is back for a second season on the 11th of August, and that's coming to Prime Video. If you've actually not seen the first season of Cruel Summer, that is coming to E4, I want to say, I think, on the 14th of August. So if you want to catch the first season of that and you haven't got Prime Video, it will be on normal TV. But yeah, look up Cruel Summer. Season 1 of that on there, and on the 11th of August, season 2 will be coming to Prime Video, and season 1, of course, is on there as well. Billions season 7 returns for its final season, now with Damian Lewis back in it for the final season, but that's coming on the 11th of August to Sky Atlantic. It will also be on Paramount Plus as well. I think it's 9 p.m. that's airing on Sky Atlantic, so you can carry on watching it on Sky Atlantic if that's where you'd be watching it, but it will be on Paramount Plus as well. Over on Lionsgate TV, we have Men in Kilts season 2, so I think Outlander's on its mid-season break for its latest season, but to fill in the gap, they've got Men in Kilts, which is Sam Heughan and Graham McTavish touring various places around the world together. I think they did Scotland last time, which of course is where Sam's from. Graham is also from Scotland but now lives in New Zealand, so the second season they're doing in New Zealand. So if you want to sort of travelogue with those guys, 11th of August on Lionsgate Plus for that. And lastly, we have on the 14th of August, Solar Opposites returns for its fourth season, which is, I know, a show which we both absolutely adore. And now has Dan Stevens taking over the voice of Corvo after Justin Roiland got fired from the show. So Corvo now has a British accent, which, as you see the clips of it, is hilarious the way that they handle that. And it looks like it's going to be endless fun. The writing looks great again. I'm so happy that's coming back. There's more Wall episodes involved in this one as well, which I know you'll
that's
be happy.
That's my favourite bit, yeah.
So, yes, Solar Opposites, if you've not watched that, it is brilliant. Season 4 of that animated series on the 14th of August on Disney+. That is everything we have for this week. There's some interesting stuff in there. Strange Planet and Solar Opposites for me. Solar Opposites and...
Strange Planet. Yeah, Strange Planet for me. I gave up on High School Musical, the musical, the series, season 2. I haven't watched Annika. It's got some dodgy reviews, even though I love Nicola Walker. But yeah, it would be Solar Opposites and Strange Planet for me. And now you've just given me that information about FBI, I'll be waiting for when I get back from my trip to Glasgow with catching up on all of those and start to watch those weekly.
Yes, definitely. And Billions, I will definitely be watching as well, because, you know, I want to see how they bring that storyline to an end, although there are like 3 spin-offs in the works for that show as well, so it's not going anywhere. If people want to contact you, where can they reach you?
Come over to Twitter and follow me at GreyTheGeek, and you'll see lots of bits about my time doing Pride as well down in Brighton this last weekend, and you'll probably see stories about me running as well. So yeah, come and follow me over there.
Yes, so that's Grey with an A as well. So
it is, yeah.
Check Grey out over on Twitter, or X, as it is supposed to be called these days, that nobody is using. Yes. So go and check him out over there. Bex, of course, you can go and find on twitch.tv/TristaBytes. That's BYTES. She's streaming most weeks, although I'm not sure whether she's streaming at the moment because she is on another project, but she is streaming stuff. So go and give her a follow over on twitch.tv/TristaBytes, and you can find her all over social media and that as well. Matt, you can go and find her at entertainmenttalk.org for lots and lots more podcasts. He's got lots of things going on over there. I think Man U podcast is probably coming back reasonably soon, I would imagine. And Daryl, you can find at HollywoodNorthNews.net for all those TV series you love which are shot in Canada. For us, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post. You can find us at Geektown on X or Twitter or whatever you're calling it these days. Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, on Instagram at Geektown UK, on TikTok at Geektown UK, and on Threads at Geektown UK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.